Hello, this week's Brewing Podcast is with me, Guy Foster, speaking to Shrenik Shah of JP Morgan, who runs the JPM Macro Opportunities Fund. And I'll be asking Shren how he positions his portfolio given the myriad of challenges facing markets at the moment. But obviously, bear in mind that we can't guarantee sources from outside Brewing Dolphin, and tax legislation and allowances can change. Now, Shren's fund has been a good performer in the otherwise underwhelming absolute return sector, but he generates that performance by taking a decent amount of risk. So remember, when investing, your capital is at risk. Investment values may increase and they can decrease as well as a result of currency fluctuations, and future performance can certainly differ from that of the past. Right, that said, let's find out more about those macro opportunities. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another Brewing Podcast with me, Guy Foster, Head of Research at Brewing Dolphin. At this turbulent time for markets, for the global economy, for all of us, it would seem, we're very pleased to be joined by Shrenik Shah. Shrenik is the manager of the JP Morgan Global Macro Opportunities Fund, and it's a fund which has got a lot of flexibility to be able to invest and to take the best opportunities that arise. So Shren, welcome to the podcast. I wonder if we could start off by just talking about the impact of COVID. Obviously, we're seeing case numbers creeping up or doing a bit more than creeping in a lot of areas and staying quite persistently high in some others as well. So perhaps you could just put that into context by saying how that's impacting the positioning in your portfolio.
Great. Good morning, Guy, and thank you for having me. Great question. And it's been, you know, a crazy year so far. So maybe just taking a little bit of a step back and just thinking about how we've been incorporating the pandemic news flow and impact into our process, just very briefly. So almost daily, we have one of the members of the team who's a specialist in healthcare relaying the infection data, the treatment, the progress, and the vaccine to us. So that helps us kind of immensely on that aspect. Within our framework, we've got a cyclical a component which looks at cyclical positioning across the four major parts of the world, so the US, Europe, China, and then Asia ex China. And that's been really good to look at the cyclical kind of trajectory as we moved into the depths of the lows in terms of activity, and now trying to really figure out the path and the contour of the recovery. And then lastly, just briefly on our framework, you guys hopefully know that we monitor medium-term real kind of strong drivers of asset markets that we call our secular themes. And what we've noticed and what we've seen, and I think everyone's experienced, the acceleration of many trends that were underway previously that have just been accelerated through the impact of COVID. So that's a kind of brief overview as to how we are incorporating the information from a process level. Now, as it pertains to what the impact is on the portfolio today, one thing is that we have to be very watchful. These trends are evolving and changing really very quickly. But I'd say in summary, the acceleration of these medium-term trends gives us increasing comfort in the parts of the portfolio, typically in equities, that are expressing the kind of widespread tech adoption theme or the climate change response theme. So we've increased our positions over the course of the year in some of these winners in the equity markets. But our cyclical process is also pointing us towards a global recovery, a synchronized recovery. It may be somewhat deterministic. So that's saying that we've had a contraction and we should expect to rebound. That's not to say that that's not necessarily investable. But I think the kind of bigger question from where we are today is we can see and we experience over the last few days looming risks on the horizon, and how we deal with those, I think, is going to be really pivotal in terms of outcomes for the rest of the year. There is still a pretty long stretch left for us to get to some form of stability, at least to get to the end of the year.
And when you talk about stability, I mean, is that the kind of stability that would come from a sort of widely distributed vaccine, or is that stability from some other source?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. So maybe starting to think about the definition of stability as a lowering on the levels of uncertainty in the economy and broadly kind of globally. So I guess sources of uncertainty that could be lowered. Clearly, progress on a vaccine would be welcome, and we feel that our monitoring of the situation gives us cause to be optimistic on that point. But again, you know, there are multiple factors at play, and it's not just the production of a successful vaccine. It's the mass production, it's the public acceptance, it's the distribution, it's the logistics, and ultimately the channel that we see a positive outcome from vaccines working through the economy is through increasing public confidence and through the lowering of restrictions imposed by governments in many of the areas that parts of the service economy that are disproportionately hit from the kind of more draconian restrictions. So a vaccine, I wouldn't say is a silver bullet, but it's one part of the element to lower uncertainty.
Do you think this uncertainty can come down before we have a widely distributed and mass produced vaccine, or is it just going to be something that's with us throughout that period of time?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think the world is learning to live with the impact of COVID for sure. So our, you know, for example, the UK government's responses today, although they may not seem so at first glance, are more targeted, clearly more thought through with more information. The treatments are better. Public behavior has changed to a certain extent. There is a significant amount of shielding. So, you know, even without a vaccine, it does feel like there is an improvement in the situation versus earlier this year. It will be impossible to get activity in certain sectors back to pre-crisis levels without a strong intervention coming from a vaccine. So I think that's an important point to note. Having said that, you know, leisure and hospitality tend to be slightly smaller proportions of the major developed economies. So they are, I guess, it would be much more disruptive for there to be impediments to the supply chain or industrial activity or manufacturing activity, or the larger segments of professional services, which are, I think, fairly efficiently being undertaken through a work from home setup in many sectors. So it's not a necessary condition, but it clearly will help. And there are other areas of uncertainty that have cropped up and would need to subside to give us, you know, the full all clear in terms of being back to normal.
Okay, great. Look, I want to just talk a little bit about what the market's doing. We, you know, this week in particular, we've seen a big pickup in volatility. I suppose it's been building a little bit, but certainly seems like it's stepped up again. And do you see that as a response to the trends in COVID, or do you think it's driven by some other factor?
Yeah, I mean, this may sound cliche, but I think it does apply today. I think this is a kind of multi-faceted response that we're seeing from the markets to a range of risks. So first and foremost, clearly, as we just talked about, there appears to be a reacceleration in infections in Europe. And there appears to be a slightly stricter kind of reaction coming from governments than we had potentially previously envisaged. So that's point one. Secondly, you know, just looking at where we've come from, we've rebounded very significantly across most risk markets over the last 3 to 6 months. So to your point, I guess some potential give back or a little bit of kind of a drawdown or some volatility, you know, should be expected. There are other kind of sources of kind of drivers of the market. Clearly, there have been some areas that have rebounded very strongly. So the technology sector, a lot of the beneficiaries in terms of work from home, clearly on a shorter term basis may have overextended even beyond the significantly improved fundamentals. And then I guess lastly, what this weekend's events with respect to the Supreme Court in the US have done is just bring the focus of the market to the US election. So that's another source of uncertainty. And lastly, we can't escape living in the UK here, that with every week that passes, we are drawing closer to the self-imposed deadline as it pertains to a solution to the end of the transition period post-Brexit.
Okay, so well, there certainly are a lot of things on your list there then. So I mean, let's focus in, I guess, on the election, because that's something that we haven't particularly spoken about yet. So the US election taking place in November, and you've mentioned obviously the passing of the Supreme Court member and the fact that that seat's now open. But how do you think investors will see that then? Is that changing the dynamics of who's likely to win? Does it give an advantage to either party, or is it just another source of uncertainty?
Yeah, I mean, so I guess kind of I would take a step back and think about the potential outcomes of the US election, because if you think about uncertainty broadly, uncertainty arises from having outcomes to events that are very different, such that as the probabilities move from one to the other, the market needs to recalibrate its medium-term views one way and then another way. So that's how I think about uncertainty. Now, for us, the way that we've analyzed the US election, what's most important with the data at hand is who is going to ultimately end up victorious in the Senate. So the data right now suggests fairly significant odds, and we can talk about this maybe a bit later, that Biden's likely to become the president. But without having a unified government, that is, had the same party in the White House as in both chambers of Congress, it's very difficult to get any sort of fiscal policy through. The years ahead, as we've kind of articulated in one of our themes in our global policy evolution theme, fiscal policy is going to dominate over monetary policy. So in an outcome where you have all three parts of the US government under the same party, then you can expect to see, if it's the Democrats, you can expect to see a strong fiscal impulse, and you can build into your thinking that when there are road bumps along the way, it will be easier to pass fiscal policy through. So that's quite a nice backdrop for risk markets.
Before you move on from that, so that's a strong fiscal stimulus from the Democrats, and that's notwithstanding then the fact that with a unified government, they would be expected to raise taxes significantly.
Yeah, like that's a good question. And I think what we've seen over the last couple of years across the world is that there has been a fading, I guess, there's been fading animosity to budget deficits. And what I actually think is likely to happen in the case of a blue wave or a unified democratic government would be that we wouldn't see anywhere near the size of tax hikes that potentially the market is anticipating in the short term, but you'll get the spending. So in effect, there'll be an increase in the fiscal deficit, so unfunded spending in the shorter term, which I believe the market will take really quite positively. And there are several factors at play here. It kind of depends on level or the magnitude of the win in the Senate, because you've got, moderates in both parties. And if it's a fairly close win for the Democrats, you can expect there to be more fiscal conservatism, but that manifests itself in a corporate tax hike that doesn't occur necessarily as fast as possible. So I actually think that that's maybe one area that markets underestimating in terms of the positivity of that potential blue wave election outcome. And on the flip side,
I was just going to ask, because actually ahead of the 2016 election, the market seemed to have a view that it was really wanting a Hillary Clinton victory and would sell off if it looked like it was getting a Donald Trump victory. And then it was really, you know, this always seemed quite strange to us, but then it was on the morning that the results started coming in that it flipped around and much more logically seemed to be really into the idea of a of a Donald Trump presidency and the tax cuts and deregulation that would come through that. And do you think there's something potentially similar here whereby the market might sort of be fearing a Biden presidency for a little while and then maybe flip round and grow to love it? Or, I mean, I don't know, what do you think the market's at the moment, what do you think the market is going to think that it was?
Yeah, I think that's good. I think that's a good question. I think broadly speaking, and the kind of nebulous concept the market is, I think that the jury's out as to where right now, where what the market thinks of each of these different outcomes. But when we kind of analyze what happened in 2016, I think two things were really important in driving the market reaction for the 12 to 18 months after that. The first was the prospect of a mid-cycle fiscal stimulus, this time, or in that case, happening through more through tax cuts than spending. And the second was the prospect of deregulation in some large sectors. And ultimately, both of those were delivered, and the market rally was, with the benefit of hindsight, was a true and was an accurate reflection of the subsequent policy. This time round, again, just looking at the numbers, we see growth in the case of a blue wave potentially being 1 to 2% higher next year through the fiscal impulse or fiscal thrust than would otherwise be the case. It's very difficult for me to think that in that instance we're not going to get a positive reaction from risk markets. This is with the, the information that we have to hand. If tomorrow, let's say, the Biden plan starts to include more immediate taxation, and we get that corporate tax rate in the U.S. moving up from, from 21% to 28% in the first quarter of next year, then the calculus would need to change. But as it stands today, I think we are fairly confident that a blue wave outcome would be net positive for large parts of risky assets.
Okay, well, I should let you tell us what you expect to happen then in the event of presumably a divided Congress, or what other scenarios would you like to go through?
I mean, it was just a divided Congress outcome, and I think the kind of the difference between the two is really simple. It's fiscal policy or not fiscal policy, or very weak fiscal policy. And in a world where we are, bumping along the effective lower bound in terms of policy rates in all developed markets, and in a world where We've just seen the Fed, for example, move to a to kind of reconstitute its constitution or its strategy towards acknowledging the fact that monetary policy needs to be conducted in a different way in these times. It's clear to us that the drivers of growth or the incremental drivers of growth over the next few years are going to be fiscal policy. That's why I think we're putting a lot of effort into trying to understand the impacts here. So I guess back to the original question, we potentially have two different, quite different outcomes from the US election. And the market flipping between the two is going to create some level of uncertainty. The other element that was added over the last week is that we may not know the election outcome for a few weeks post the actual election date. And that election outcome may need to depend on the courts. So again, you know, in a situation where that uncertainty is increasing, I think it's right and it makes sense for there to be a little bit more of a discount to risky assets ahead of that increasingly likely outcome.
Okay, so, I mean, from what you say then, it really sounds like a divided Congress, which is quite a material probability. I mean, maybe not the most probable outcome, but certainly a material one, would be a very disappointing one from an economic perspective if, as you say, the importance of fiscal policy is going up, and this and that's an outcome that that would negate that. So, I mean, what would you anticipate an appropriate investment response would be to a divided Congress?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good question. I think we would, and maybe I'll speak to the context of our positioning. Over the last couple of months, we've kind of monotonically or continually increased our cyclical exposure. So that's through, for example, US industrials, US banks, autos in Europe, basic resources, etc. Now, it's very difficult for me to think that we should be holding the same level of cyclical risk we do if today we knew that there was going to be no fiscal or very little fiscal thrust coming through in the US next year. But I think that's an immediate policy or portfolio implication. The on the flip side, you know, these medium-term secular trends that we're invested in, I don't think that they are derailed much by almost all outcomes of the US election. So for me, there would be an allocation back to the kind of tech themes that they're playing in cloud computing, in electronic payments, within the consumer discretionary space, in the secular winners like LVMH, like Nike. So those quality growth stocks, I think, would potentially see strong flows at the expense of more cyclically geared investments. And then there's a question regarding the path of regulation. So regulation is an aspect of policy that in large part in control of the person in the White House. So, you know, if Trump remains in power, you can expect potentially a reducing of the fears of regulation, for example, on financials. So potentially there is a shorter term investment to be made in some of the larger cap significant financial money centers in the US, for example. So I think there are implications as it pertains to other asset classes. For me, it feels right now a fairly clear bet that a blue wave means higher back end yields. I think we're still yet to form our opinion on other outcomes with respect to fixed income. And when it comes to the dollar, I think that although, for example, both parties in the US have got some similar strategic views towards China and the rise of China as a superpower, the tactical method through which they seek to achieve those strategic views is quite different. And under Trump, you know, I'd expect there to be a kind of less cooperative, more uncertain near-term framework, whereas under Biden, I suspect we move back a little bit to a more cooperative, allies-based approach, which probably should warrant a reduction in risk premium in EM assets, which is clearly positive for them.
Okay. Well, look, that's a very good summary with which to finish. So Shren, look, thanks so much for talking us through that. I know there were a whole host of other things we would have liked to get onto as well if we had the time. But thanks for that really useful summary. And thanks also to all of our listeners for joining us. Hopefully you found it an interesting discourse on the interaction of politics and markets. And hopefully you'll join us too for another Bruin podcast.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for your time.